Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Thursday, July 14th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
And how is Al today?
Bloodied but unbowed.
All righty. Well, let's look at gold. Well, you know, it was a little bloody in the morning, but it did come back a little bit down 9-10. Gold's been having some powerful rebounds, and so for it to be down $9 at $1,334, not a bad day for gold. Be better if it was up, but again, look to the first of the year. We still had a nice run in gold. Silver today down 09, still holding strong over that 20 level, $20.32. Platinum is up 3 at 1103. Palladium is up 6 at $654. There was a little pressure earlier on in the day. It followed through down 0.22 at 96.11. Crude oil today came back 0.73, not a lot, but a little, at 45.48 for crude oil. And your market closes today. We have the Dow up triple digits once again, all-time highs, 132, 18,505. The NASDAQ up 28 at 5,034. The S&P up 11 at 2163. Less fear this week than or today than we've seen in the past. So your 10-year yield is climbing back up 1.53%, up 0.06. And that euro is just holding at 111. It goes up, it comes down, but it stays at the 111. And European markets, of course, some were higher, some were lower, along with the Asian markets. And, you know, I was looking around for the reasons why the stock markets were so high. We talked yesterday about the buybacks from corporations. That's probably the number one reason. But also the Bank of England today came out and, you know, they calmed the markets and says, well, hey, we're going to do whatever is necessary, feeding the markets a little confidence that stimulus will be coming next week, or next month. So the Bank of England did keep their interest rates unchanged today. And, you know, if you're grasping for straws as to why the stock market was higher, this is one of those straws. And some were expecting a cut, but the Bank of England said it was likely to deliver some stimulus in 3 weeks' time, possibly as a package of measures. once it has assessed how the June 23rd referendum decision affected the economies. And so, you know, things were sort of happy over there. I'm sure things have been calmed after Cameron stepped down yesterday and the new prime minister came in and appointing the appropriate people. And also, this, I think it was this week, you had Ben Bernanke. He's over in Japan talking to the leaders in Tokyo this week. Had floated the idea of perpetual bonds during earlier discussions in Washington with one of the prime minister's key advisors.
So what do perpetual bonds mean?
In which the government issues non-marketable perpetual bonds with no maturity dates. And the
so
bank,
you
let me finish.
Money from the government, you never get it back.
And let me finish. And the Bank of Japan directly buys them. Could work as the strongest tool for Japan to overcome their deflation.
Going to buy a bond that you never get, that you never get back.
The government buys it. Which
the government buys it.
The Bank of Japan directly buys them. So I get it.
The rice wine or whatever it is, the sake. Somebody's been in the sake a little bit too much. They need to kind of taper off on that. We're going to have perpetual bonds.
I heard, I don't know if this is true, but a long time ago, I used to do payroll for a fairly large Chinese restaurant, and they always said that the reason, you know, the Chinese, they eat so much rice that it just ferments in their stomach, leaving them in a constant high, like, you know, like rice wine. It kind of makes sense. But I remember the person told me was very serious, so I don't know. But anyway.
Was the person who told you Oriental or Chinese?
Yes.
Or was he somebody else?
No, they were Oriental.
Just one of those things. They laughed. They said, you see
it was
that?
It was to cover up their habit of drinking too much of that rice wine.
Uh-huh.
That's what it was.
Saying, oh, he's just hitting the rice too hard. It's an excuse. You've been drinking sake again. No, I haven't. I've just been eating rice. You know, it was all very innocent. No, you've been hitting the sake. That's what's really going on.
Yeah, probably. So Ben Bernanke is giving information on how to create helicopter money. And, you know, throughout the – and Japan, I mean, they really are grasping at straws. In 2014, they met with Paul Krugman. They met with Joseph Stiglitz. He's another Nobel recipient. I mean, they're just talking to all these economists to try to get their economy stimulated. But what was also interesting about this perpetual bond was Adair Turner, a former head of Britain's financial regulator, has said it would be useful to make clear to the Japanese people that it's not necessary that the public debt all be repaid.
Oh, good. Good. That's not necessary that the debt be repaid. Which means we are not paying the debt. Okay? But don't worry, because it's not necessary that we pay the debt. Oh, I see.
I mean,
we're going to convert it into permanent bonds, which means we won't ever repay the debt, but we don't repudiate it because it's a permanent bond. See?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
the same guy goes on, he says, I do not believe that there is any credible scenario in which Japanese government debt can be repaid in the normal sense of the word repay.
Absolutely.
It would therefore be useful to make clear to the Japanese people that the public debt does not all have to be repaid, since some of it can be permanently monetized by the Bank of Japan. I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
I know. This is just Alice in Wonderland. That's what we're talking about here. Who's the head of the Bank of Japan? Is that the Cheshire Cat? The Mad Hatter? Or who is it exactly? Because that's what we're talking about. When they say, I've been saying this for 4 or 5 years, what can't be paid won't be paid. And here's the Bank of Japan essentially saying, well, We're not going to be able to pay off the whole debt, but don't worry about it.
We'll just tell the
people. It's all okay, but the point is, the second point, the debt can't be paid. That's not exactly a surprise. Most people understand that right now, but what a lot of people do not yet understand or appreciate is that one man's debt is another man's asset. You wipe out the debt, you wipe out the correlative asset. If they've loaned a trillion yen and they have a bond for a trillion yen, if it turns out that the loan can't be repaid, the bond is worthless. And they're using that bond as collateral in the bank. And under fractional reserve banking, they're probably using it. If they've got a trillion yen bond, they are probably using it to loan anywhere from 5 to 20 trillion yen to the Japanese people, assuming they'll buy it, they'll borrow anything. They've maybe bit to where they just don't want to go into debt anymore. But the point is, if the debt can't be paid, it wipes out the correlative paper asset. And that means those paper assets disappear. If you knock out a trillion yen in debt, okay, we're not going to pay, not necessary to pay a trillion yen in debt. Well, okay, but you're also going to wipe out a trillion yen's worth of bonds, a trillion yen's worth of paper capital. And how are we going to survive that? Or how is Japan going to survive it? And how are we going to survive in this country when we face the same problem? Because we're going to have to face it. The debt can't be paid. And someone is going to have to come out, Janet Yellen will have to come out and explain to us that it's not necessary to pay all the debt. Of course it's necessary. If you don't pay the debt, whoever loaned you the money loses whatever was loaned.
And that's the people. So let's just come out and warn them up front. Let's just warn them, hey, we're not going to repay on these bonds. So find another recourse.
We will come up with some cock and bull story as to why it's not necessary to pay the debt.
It is really
and it's
amazing.
Absolutely necessary if you want to maintain the correlative paper capital. You wipe out the debt, you wipe out the correlative paper capital. Where's the currency coming from to build the next shopping center, factory, homes, lend to people to buy flat screen TVs or automobiles? Where's that coming from if we wipe out the, right now the government says the U.S. debt, national debt, they say it's $20 trillion. That's the official story. John Williams says it's $100 trillion. Congressional Budget Office and economist Lawrence Kotlikoff say it's over $200 trillion. But whatever it is, if it's $20 trillion, okay, cancel the debt. It's not necessary to pay the debt. Great. Sounds like a wonderful idea. But you also wipe out $20 trillion in paper wealth. And every one of you who has a pension fund, for example, and you're planning to retire, your pension fund is probably highly invested in these bonds. And when somebody says, oh, we don't need to pay the debt, see, it's not necessary. Well, what that's going to mean is your pension fund is going to be wiped out. And you're going to have to figure out how to make it through your retirement after they cancel the debt, because some of the debt is reflected in the bonds that are in your pension account. This whole thing is just madness. And as it gets crazier and crazier, what it suggests to me is that we are getting closer and closer to an implosion. These people are becoming irrational. I mean, it's just nonsensical. It's, you know, when things are going halfway well, they can come up with credible explanations as to, well, we can do this or that, or you need to have confidence in us because we really know what we're doing. When the whole thing starts to break down and they go into panic mode, it's at that point you can expect to hear just extraordinary, bizarre, irrational statements as they try to pretend that it's all under control. But really, I don't think anybody's in control right now. If people have influence, it's not completely without influence, but control, I don't think it's there. So, crazier and crazier.
It really is, and and the sad thing is, if they're giving advice to Japan, this is the kind of advice that is happening right here. Yeah,
I mean, we're so smart here. Let us all. We're so smart, we can help Japan and their problems. So you see, we're experts at this.
Japan can't come out of their problems mainly based on their the population.
You mean the demographics?
The demographics, yeah. They can't. I mean, they're going to have to get used to this lower level of standard of living. They can't come out of it unless they have another baby boom real quick. And then it's going to be another 20, 30 years. And it's much like here in the States. We're going to experience the same thing. And I forgot to put it in the newsletter this past week. I'll see if I can't get it into our newsletter this coming Monday. Patrick Buchanan took the statistics from the UN as far as populations in various parts of the world. And for the England, they're toast. I mean, they're literally toast. England will not be England in 20 years. And it's the same way with the States.
Yeah, I understand.
I mean, and the numbers were just shocking. It was just literally shocking.
But you know something? They're looking at these numbers now, but the basis of these numbers has been available for, I'll bet you, at least a generation. This isn't something where all of a sudden we see something
and we say,
oh my gosh, this is such a surprise. No, it's just a surprise to the public. But people in positions of power have been able to see this and understand it's coming for at least a generation before now.
No, it's the immigration, the impacts of the immigration that is having on the populations of the various countries. And sure, yeah, they're controlling the immigration and so forth, but these are projections based on also the immigration and how within the countries how it's going to change. That's what's – and no, they didn't know that 20 years ago. Sure, we had a declining population, a population that it was, you know, becoming elderly, but the shocking surprise is the immigration and the births within. And, you know, the births within the exactly how it's changing the population within.
And not by accident.
I'll send that over.
One thing about the immigration. That's not happening by accident. It's not, oh, gee, we've got to help you. Let's do the humane thing. They want to destroy countries. They want to destroy nations. And they're going to do it by inducing people of a foreign race, a foreign culture. They're going to come into the nation, and they're going to sit there. And the net result is going to be the destruction of nations, because when these nations are divided and fragmented, they are more easily ruled by a new world order. If you have a nation that is coherent from sea to shining sea, that poses a threat to the new world order that will be almost impossible for them to deal with. But if you can divide this country up by bringing in enough immigrants from foreign countries, and a lot of people say, oh, that's not a problem, you've got to be liberal about this. Historically, a nation has been defined as one race, one culture, one language, one religion, living on a limited and a defined parcel of land. All right? You had borders, and within the borders, there was a certain amount of homogeneity, if I'm pronouncing that word correctly, but everyone was pretty much same language, same race, same culture, same religion. Okay. That nation would stand together. But when you start dividing it up where you have significantly different religions and significantly different cultures and multiple races, it may be that the people who are advocating how what a kumbaya and the rest of that, they are leading us to national disaster. And not by accident. It's not out of ignorance. It's being done intentionally. We've got about 15 seconds.
Here's
left.
Just a quick paragraph. It involves Europe. Between now and 2050, Europe will lose 32 million people. Not one European nation has a fertility rate, 2.1 children per woman, sufficient to keep it alive. A quarter of all Europeans are 60 or older. The tribes that created the West are passing away. And,
cause for sadness. We're talking about Christendom. We're talking about the economic engine for the world for most of the last couple of centuries.
And then when you look at Africa and the Africans, only 5% of Africans are 6 years or older, while 41% are 15. So this will be in the newsletter this week. So folks, make sure you go to the website, dgscoins.com, and sign up, or go, even just go to Pat Buchanan's website and take a peek at it. It's very interesting.
All right, let's take a break for some commercials, Melody. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
PSA count high? Half of all men over 50 have an enlarged prostate. You can shrink your prostate without harmful drugs or risky surgery. The secret to healing the prostate is to cleanse the prostate and the liver. Call Apothecary Herbs to ask about the Prostate Kit for a comprehensive way to heal and soothe your prostate. Educate yourself on how easy it can be to disinfect, cleanse, and restore your prostate gland. Call Apothecary Herbs for the Prostate Kit and successfully reduce swelling, inflammation, dissolve stones, and cleanse the blood to obtain the results you need. Money-back guarantee with every purchase. Call the experts in organ cleansing. Call Apothecary Herbs now for the Prostate Kit and empower yourself. Toll free 866-229-3663 or international callers 704-875-8010. That's toll free 866-229-3663 or visit the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
I have a different type of a special today. I'm going to keep it at
of a special then.
It's a special special. Huh? It's the same price, $1,225, and it includes a Mint State 64 Morgan silver dollars. The price on this is just incredible. You're paying about a couple bucks over wholesale, so it's really a good price. Beautiful Morgan silver dollars. We have a limited amount of them. Mint State 64 Morgan silver dollars and a 1 ounce platinum, a full ounce platinum. And
is this a platinum eagle?
No, it isn't a platinum eagle. No, it isn't. And for the total price of $1,225. That includes your shipping costs. Now, platinum is trading, $250 lower than
gold.
So it is a very good time to be picking up some platinum. You should have some platinum in your portfolio if you have your gold and silver. You know, don't buy platinum instead of gold if you don't have any gold. So again, this is something that can be added to your portfolio. It's a great addition at these lower prices. It's been moving up quite nicely here in the last couple of weeks, and so it's a good time to buy some. And this is a great little special with the Mint State 64 Morgan Silver Dollars. $1,225, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And make sure you visit our website, dgscoins.com.
Got an article here from Real Money, and the headline is Inflation. We ain't seen nothing yet. It says employment and withholding tax deposits to the Treasury are rising. There's been a sudden surge in employment taxes flowing to the government. The series had been steadily rising, but the recent explosive move higher is ominous. When I look at this, and that's the opinion of the author of this article, it tells me one thing. Labor shortages are developing, which is driving higher wages that are higher and higher. J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon talked about why he's giving 18,000 of his employees a raise. He said it was necessary so J.P. Morgan could continue to attract and keep good talent. In other words, here's a CEO of a major corporation telling everyone point blank that it's getting tougher and tougher to find people, hire them, and keep them working for you. Firms have had to pay up. All right, it's called a labor shortage. And this is the opinion of the author, again, of this article in Real Money. There's a labor shortage happening under the Fed's nose, and it's spreading very fast. I don't agree with that. All right. I don't agree that there's a labor shortage. I am inclined to agree with John Williams, who estimates that the real unemployment rate is something like 23%. How can we have a labor, if he's anywhere close to being correct, how can we have a labor shortage if unemployment is in the neighborhood of 23%, 20%, 18%, 15%? How do we have a labor shortage? The only way that can make sense is there might be a labor shortage in certain industries and in certain technologies, you know, and there may not be enough rocket scientists right now. There's a labor shortage perhaps of rocket scientists or brain surgeons or who knows. But I disagree with the article's premise that there is a labor shortage. But the talk about Janet Yellen being concerned with a weak May jobs report were only something like, what, 18,000 ultimately? 16,000 jobs were allegedly created. She's also allegedly confused or concerned with Brexit. And he says maybe she's reading the doom and gloom pages of Zero Hedge and thinking some meltdown is coming. Meanwhile, the U.S. stock market is setting new highs. The FTSE is surging, and the British pound is roaring back. The British pound is roaring back from what? An irrational decline because of the Brexit situation. Somebody took a vote. Big deal. All right? The British pound is roaring back from an irrational decline. You know? This is not a surprise. This is an evidence that the economies are running well again. But the author of this article is saying that he's essentially saying happy days are here again. There's a labor shortage. Wages have to go up. Inflation will go up. He says the rise in wages will drive a wage push cycle of inflation. Bottom line is fiscal stimulus is good for stocks and the economy. It means the stocks will rise and the dollar will fall. Certain sectors of the market will be much better than others. The main sectors to benefit will be commodities, gold, and materials. Now the real inflation is coming. He's anticipating significant inflation.
I'm not saying that inflation can't happen, but he thinks Janet Yellen is missing the boat. He thinks Janet Yellen is overly concerned that there may be a meltdown coming. Well, maybe she is. Or maybe she actually understands what's going on here, and she has a realistic concern that we're on the edge of some serious correction in the economy. The author of this article, he seems to think the corrections are behind us, and happy days are here again. Now, here's another article published today, CNBC, and the headline is, "Online prices are showing signs of deflation." Now, this article is not saying that all prices are deflating, but it does say that there's evidence that the prices that reflect however much buying takes place on the internet, those prices are showing signs of deflation. First article is saying, oh, we've got inflation. It's coming around. It's going to get big. It's going to be horrific. This guy said, no, we're dealing with deflation, at least on the internet. Again, he's talking about online prices. He's not talking about the prices at brick-and-mortar stores per se, but he has a certain number of interesting insights here. Government data puts inflation at about 1%. And even that anemic number may overstate the true level of price growth. Billions of online transactions are tracked on a daily basis by Adobe and show that deflation is rampant across several consumer categories. Prices are falling fast in the Adobe Digital Price Index, which measures 80% of all online transactions from the top 100 U.S. retailers. That's a pretty big, that's a big select, that's a large sample. They go on to say the Consumer Price Index, which we are all familiar with, this is not Adobe's Digital Price Index, this is the Consumer Price Index, is calculated on a monthly basis by surveying the costs of about 80,000 items, while the Adobe Digital Price Index tracks 2.2 million products every day. CPI tracks 80,000 per month. The DPI, the Digital Price Index, is tracking 2.2 million products per day. Online commerce makes up almost 8% of all retail sales. That's not an impressive number. All right, 8% is something. You know, it wasn't so long ago, it was nothing. It's up to 8%. It's undoubtedly going to grow higher, but in and of itself, that's not a big weight out of the economy, 8% of all retail sales. So if we have 8% of all retail sales, we see evidence of deflation. In 92% of all retail sales that are not taking place on the internet, we may see some evidence of inflation. We're left to wonder what's really going on here. are we seeing inflation, deflation? The truth is, we see some of each at all time. The question is, which is predominant, Melody?
Inflation.
Well, maybe, but not by much.
In our daily needs. I mean, no, we don't need TVs. We don't need phones. We don't need the things that you buy online most of the time, where the prices are going up. What we do need: food, energy, health care.
Internet connections.
Those are the things that are
internet
and
connections.
What I don't understand is they're
cable
including
cable TVs, so we
let
can
me
watch
finish. They're
Dancing
including,
with the Stars.
They're including supply and demand. Well, you know, if you have competition, the price is going down. To me, that doesn't really designate deflation. Deflation, you know, is not just a, you know, competition.
Certainly competition will increase deflation. Competition increases the probability of deflation, and
it's not deflation, and per se, the true.
Well, there's two
deflation.
Different kinds. There's monetary deflation.
And
there's price deflation. It's two different things, really. But
true. I guess to some degree we do see something similar to, you know, it might be more disinflation than anything, but
you're coining a word now, And we had enough of that from George W. All right, he coined words also, and that only got us into trouble, Melody. Or maybe you're not coining disinflation. I don't know.
Oh, I'm not.
Well,
anyway.
But it's a synonym for deflation.
No, disin-
I wrote an article, though, back
about- Disinflation is just a slowing in the rate of price inflation. So
it's not. It is a slowing in inflation. It's not deflation, which
correct.
Is like negative inflation or inflation is negative deflation, blah, blah, blah.
So,
I wrote an article back about 2000, might have been as early as 2008, and I considered the Internet, and I concluded that it must be a deflationary force because the Internet is conducive to incredibly vicious competition. If you're going to try to sell products on the Internet, you have almost no choice but to cut your prices to the bare bones. There's not much opportunity to make profit on the Internet. You can, things can go viral once in a while, and you can make spectacular, you can make spectacular, you can generate spectacular wealth that way. But in terms of selling refrigerators, for example, you can sell refrigerators and make $50 a refrigerator. But you start selling on the Internet and somebody else is going to sell that same refrigerator. He sees you're making $50, he'll be happy to make $40. And somebody else, maybe in Mexico, will say he's happy to make $25. And he can do it with a website. He can sell refrigerators here in the United States with a website. All right? Well, he's located down in Sonora or someplace. All right? And somebody in Bangladesh says, say, you Mexicans are greedy. I'll sell those refrigerators for $5 profit. And the point is, because there is such a low investment in trying to sell, just sell. I'm not talking about manufacture, but just sell products. If you can buy them wholesale and make $5 a piece off them, maybe you get by, but it's not the same thing as the brick-and-mortar stores where you might have made $50 on that refrigerator. Now you might only be making $5 on the Internet. That competition is so fierce that it's going to reach a point where perhaps the only people who really be able to sell on the Internet are the manufacturers. We're going to eliminate the store. The at least the Internet conception of a store is going to be just can't afford it. Can't afford to sell products other than other people manufacture. The manufacturer, he might be able to make a good profit if he's got something that's extraordinary and no one else can duplicate. And as long as he's the only one who can sell what may be the best refrigerator, yeah, he can get his price. He can make a good profit. But as soon as someone else learns how to duplicate that refrigerator, bang, the whole thing goes right down the pipe. Point is, I suspected at the time that the Internet was going to be a deflationary force. And right now, I still think that's true, and I also suspect, and I can't prove it, it's just hypothesis and speculation, but I also suspect that the deflation may be the reason, the deflation that we find on the Internet, maybe that's the reason that the government has been unable to create the kind of inflation that they were hoping for with all their quantitative easing and lowering interest rates and trying to stimulate the economy. Oh. They were trying to cause inflation, cause significant inflation. They have failed badly, and I wonder if the reason they did is because they're bumping heads with the primal force of the Internet, which is deflationary. Prices are falling.
I don't think 8% of retail from the Internet is sufficient enough to...
I think I agree.
Cause the degree of concern that would...
Contributing factor.
You know, so... But again, I think we're seeing probably more disinflation than... And again, inflation in our daily lives. We need health care. We need food. We need that. Those are all highly inflated. As long as we're on a fiat currency, you know, I don't care what day-to-day, you know, gives me as far as, you know, a deflationary or deflationary, because everything will be inflationary, period. I mean, that's what you
well,
get with the fiat currency. That's what you get with the fiat currency.
I understand period. That, and we can talk about that a little more when we return. We've got an article that was written by Nelson Holtberg, and really some nice insights into what's happened to this country since we went off the gold standard. We'll be back in a moment on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Get older, they are subject to hormone imbalance. And when this happens, men can experience osteoporosis, memory loss, irritability, blood sugar imbalance, weight gain, enlarged prostate, erectile dysfunction, and risk of stroke. The human endocrine system manufactures hormones. Why not feed your system plant nutrition to make the hormones that are right for you? For centuries, these herbs have been used to balance the male hormone system. Men, you've waited long enough for the male hormone formula. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free 866-229-3663 for the male hormone formula. 866-229-3663 or online at thepowerherbs.com. 866-229-3663, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisker with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, and we mentioned that we're going to talk a little bit about parts of an article by Nelson Hultberg that were printed on 24H Gold just recently. And the headline, the title of the article is "An Honest Monetary System." And he says between 1800 and 1913, the index of consumer prices decreased by 40% from 51 to 30. That means it decreased by about a third of a percent a year. That was deflationary. Prices were falling by about a third of a percent per year. He goes on, he says, this was because the money supply was tied to gold and couldn't be expanded arbitrarily in excess of the growth of goods and services by the nation's bankers. The reason is that gold must be manufactured slowly and steadily, while paper can be printed easily and instantly, hundreds of billions of dollars overnight. As a result, there was no upward pressure on prices. That means from 1800 to 1913, for 113 years, prices were falling in this country, which means you could get a better deal. Your children could live cheaper than you did. Right? That's the implication, and it probably laid much of the foundation, a big part of the foundation, for ultimate prosperity in this country. He goes on, he says, in contrast, today we no longer use gold as money, but paper printed by the Federal Reserve, according to the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, and whatever it is that they want to do. As a result, the consumer price index literally exploded, increasing from 30, and he points out that from 1800 to 1913, the consumer price index had gone from 50 to 30, fallen, right? But he says, as a result, once we got into this fiat monetary system, the consumer price index literally exploded, increasing from 30 in 1913 to 587 in 2005. 1913 is the year we decided to allow a Federal Reserve, a private banking system, to run our financial affairs. Goes on, he says, by 2015, the index had reached 711. All right? From 2005, it had gone from 587 to 711 for a total increase of 2,270%. Prices had risen by over 20 times. 22 times is almost 23 times. Prices had risen, and it's not clear whether he's talking about from 1913 to 2015 or if he's talking about all the way back from 1800 to 2015. But regardless, that's inflation. This was because the money supply was created by the Fed bureaucrats at a far faster rate than the production of goods and services. And he claims that this shows us clearly that government money managers are not reliable and never will be, and that fiat money and that a fiat monetary system can be expanded at the discretion of government bankers and will never be stable. Well, what he's telling us is that there's a point. American history, if you look back and you consider the numbers, we did well under a gold-based monetary system. And the stuff didn't really begin to hit the fan until they said, oh, wait, we can use these fiat dollars just as we can use them just as if they were gold. And it's all nonsense. It can't work. Now, what it has done, the fiat monetary system has perhaps accelerated our economy. All right. It's been perhaps a stimulant in the last, certainly since Nixon, maybe since Nixon. I'm not even sure that that's true, but the most you can say is that maybe the fiat monetary system has worked like you giving us shots of amphetamine. It's speeded things up more than they might otherwise have been. Right? But there's a problem, a big problem with injecting currency into the economy and causing inflation. And the problem with that is that the currency is not based on our productive capacity. This currency that's been injected into the economy to try to keep it alive, they doubled the national debt in the last 7-8 years. Doubled it. Took all the however much debt we had in the first 200 years and change in this country, they doubled it under the Obama administration. And it was done largely to try to stimulate the economy and hold this thing together. Well, where did they get the money to do that? It really didn't come from higher taxes. It didn't come from higher productivity. It came from debt. The government borrowed the money, the currency, to stimulate the economy, which means the problem with relying on inflation is that ultimately it generates a horrendous debt that's too big to be repaid. And that's where the stuff hits the fan. When we finally get to the point where the government has to admit, oh, gee, you're never going to believe this, but we're not going to be able to pay the national debt. Maybe they'll admit it and they'll just repudiate some or all of it. Maybe they won't even talk about it, and they'll just cause hyperinflation. And hyperinflation will wipe out the national debt. But as I explained earlier in the program, when inflation generates this huge national debt, and they have to go deeper and deeper into inflation in order to wipe that debt out, the people that are holding the debt instruments, the bonds in your pension funds, for a classic example, are going to find themselves impoverished. And this is the end of the rainbow for these notions about inflation as a wonderful thing. It's not. Well, Hultberg, let's see what else. He says, how can any logical observer of the 20th century claim that the Fed's inflationary monetary policy has given us stability? we do a commercial on this program every day that the price of the dollar's purchasing power has fallen by over 95% just since 1971. Is there any stability in that? How many people were able to save and prepare for their retirement, their old age, and to leave something for their children and found out that, gee, their savings were significantly diminished by inflation, which has been standard policy of the Federal Reserve for over a century. We've been hurt. We've been diminished. We've been impoverished. We can't afford to have children in this country anymore. Costs too much. All right? It's bad for us as a nation. It's not just bad for us financially. It's bad for us as a nation. Hultberg goes on and he says, in fact, the Fed's expansion of the money supply has grossly debased the dollar and sent prices skyrocketing over the past 100 years. Yet the publicity, the publicly announced reason for the Fed's creation in 1913 was that it would be a great stabilizer of the banking system and our economy, and the Fed's primary duty was to contain inflation. The Fed has never contained inflation. They have always sought to cause inflation. They've sought to cause it at a 2-3% level. They haven't sought so far to cause it at 20% or 100% level. But they have caused inflation. They're not the force against inflation. They're the force in favor of it. And he says, unfortunately, the Fed's creation has brought us precisely the opposite. Meaning, again, the Fed's creation was to be the great stabilizer of the banking system and the economy and to control and minimize inflation. Didn't happen. What all of this goes back to is if we had a gold-based monetary system, it puts the government in a situation where they have to work with the revenue that they are able to tax out of the American people. And that revenue reflects our productivity. And as long as that's true, if the government wants more money, the solution is they got to figure out how Americans can become more productive. Not more consumers, more producers. All right? More productive. You want more taxes? We got to produce more. As it is right now with this fiat monetary system, they don't need to rely on our taxes. They rely on borrowing. They don't care if we're productive or not. All we need to do is consume things. They tell us it's a consumer-based economy. That's crazy. That's telling us, it's like telling us that farmers are people who work on the farm. And their job is to eat the corn. Not to grow the corn, eat the corn. Doesn't take any brains to figure out it won't be long before we don't have any corn. If we have a consumer-based economy, it won't be long before we have nothing left to consume. We have been misled, we've been deceived, we've been defrauded, we've been impoverished. And it's been done by people in positions of power, and it's been fairly persistent for the last 100 years or more. You know, Baron Rothschild, he said, I don't care who makes the laws as long as I control the money. Federal Reserve has controlled the money and undoubtedly used that money to bribe critical people in positions of power and keep moving things along and moving things along where ultimately we're going to turn into a third world nation while we're clinging to some worthless pieces of paper. And the lesson here in all of this is, look, people need to appreciate gold, all right? It's not just an investment, it is your political future. Your children's political future will depend to a great degree on whether or not we stick with a fiat monetary system or go back to gold. If we stick with a fiat monetary system, we're headed to catastrophe and poverty. If we go back to gold, it's not going to be an easy situation because we've already dug a big hole and we're in it. But gold is the way we might get out of it. Fiat money will just make the hole deeper and more disastrous. Ta-da, Melody.
Ta-da.
Yeah.
Yes, Al.
You had something you wanted to talk about.
Well, no, I was just wanted to...
You did. You told me...
Well, no, I just thought it was interesting that tomorrow, I guess, Donald Trump is supposed to mention his, or to announce his VP. I guess everyone is expecting it to be Pence. So we'll have to see if Donald Trump doesn't give a... Maybe he'll go totally in a different direction, but... I really don't know much about this man, but...
I've never heard of him before. I don't even know who he is.
Who
is his defense? Yeah.
He's the governor of...
Not Texas, I can tell you that.
No.
Well, I got one. I don't know the other 49. All right, if he's...
He's the governor, Indiana.
All right.
Indiana. I knew it was one of those states. Indiana, Minnesota, yeah. Yeah, he's the governor of Indiana. So we'll see if Donald Trump does. The ones that were most, that he was considering was, of course, Christie, which was no surprise, and Newt, good old Newt.
And, I'm glad he didn't pick Newt Gingrich.
Well.
That guy's something of a villain in my book. He's an intelligent guy and the rest of it. But he calculated at one point that they could bribe everybody that needed to be bribed in this country for X number of dollars. That was true back when he was during the Bush administration, if I recall correctly.
And Newt was number one.
And it was cheap. He figured out, yeah, we can bribe them all for next to nothing.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, just what this country needs. A genius who can figure out how to bribe politicians.
But he's the...
Cheap politicians.
Yeah. He's a staunch social conservative. He's been married for more than 30 years. He was born in Columbus. He's 57 years old. He hosted a talk radio program for 4 years.
Hey, he's got my vote.
Hey! But, I hear different things about the folks in Indiana, whether they like him or not, but I guess it's par for the course. And so we'll see if that's the one he chooses.
Well, if he's going to make a choice, that's the one I've heard in the news. He is Pence is the likely choice.
Mm-hmm.
Insiders say he's going to be the choice. He's going if Trump is going to make a choice tomorrow, then unless he plans on surprising us all, looks like Pence is probably just from the reports.
I would think so.
I have to guess. It, But with Trump, who can say?
Pence is a little more, he's low key, so he would, and he certainly knows his way around Washington. Pence even considered running for president in 2016, but decided to run for re-election as governor, so.
Well, we will look forward to hearing from Mr. Trump tomorrow and see what happens there, and other than that, we're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in then. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball. Money, money.